how do we do this thing better? Is seeing the divine in each other, seeing the complexity and the nuance and the infinite beauty of the other that we're talking to, the others who are in our lives.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Welcome to In Good Faith. Today we're talking with somebody who is exploring how people of different faith denominations or traditions, and even how people of different political parties can get along and talk with each other. I'm laughing because, you know why I'm laughing, because we have been drawn into or tried to avoid being drawn into these conversations in our own lives.
Yes.
I'm in studio with senior producer Heather Bigley.
Hello.
Also Ashton Rowan.
Good afternoon, Steve.
Corey Nathan is the host of the Talking Politics and Religion Without Killing Each Other podcast. I mean, he just said it all there in the title where we know exactly where we're going. He was raised Jewish, later converted to Christianity, and you'll hear how passionate he is about respectful discussion. He's also has his own media company. So this is something he does as a passion on the side. It's not what he does for a living.
Right. And I really loved listening to his interview. I myself changed religions or changed denominations when I was a teenager. And so listening to the work he's put in inspired me to think about maybe some more work I need to do.
And he also just talks about work overcoming any kind of difference within family, within relationship. These are strategies that he's passionate about that can be applied to really any kind of discussion that could get out of hand, and it's very important.
And the image that I wrote down was how not to pour gravy on your uncle during Thanksgiving dinner and kind of keep these in control.
Yeah.
I started off by asking Corey, why do this podcast?
We'd like to take some space back, you know, from the screamers,
yeah,
the ones who seem to take all the oxygen out of the room. So I'm really passionate about this stuff, partly because my own story, my own religious journey, as well as how I've engaged politically. And I thought, man, I'd love to have some conversations. The vast majority of us, you could call us the exhausted majority, that maybe we could take some space back in this digital village square, if you will, to have conversations, yeah, about important issues.
Which we need to. When we talk past each other, yell at each other, nothing good gets accomplished. And some of the best ideas don't emerge because they're in the hearts and minds of people who don't want to engage that,
yeah,
way.
Yeah, no, it's true. We have tendencies. Part of it is circumstantial, our environment, whether it's our media environment or social media environment. We have these impulses to engage in a contentious way that we may see somebody or hear about somebody's one opinion, and then we begin to generalize that person and label them as some sort of, you know, other. So they're on the other team. And boy, we just want to get into the rhetorical ping pong with them so we can win this imaginary debate. But that's highly unproductive. Usually you come out, you know, if all you're doing is throwing mud at each other, you end up just digging a hole and getting really dirty.
Yeah.
I find that important topics like politics and religion, it's basically how we live among each other. So it is necessary to talk about this stuff, especially with people that we care about.
Well, Corey, you come to this with life authority because you've had practice in reconciling different ways of thinking. And I wonder if you could take us back to how you were, yeah, raised religiously and a little bit of your faith journey. And I think that's going to lead into how you do what you do now on your,
sure,
podcast.
Yeah. To be clear, I am not doing this as the expert of talk politics and religion without killing each other. I'm doing it because I'm like the student in the front row saying, man, this is the disease. I've been diagnosed. I need the cure. I am sick. So I was raised in an observant Jewish home. We went to an Orthodox synagogue. We kept kosher. I was bar mitzvahed, went to Hebrew high school, the whole shebang, kosher shebang, that is. No, I'm just kidding. But in my late 20s, I was 29, and I went on a pretty serious inquiry for the better part of a year that led to me becoming a Christian, born again, Bible thumping Christian. And shortly after that, I had to have a very difficult conversation with my dad. In fact, it was Thanksgiving morning. We took a red eye back to the East Coast and sat out on the porch of the house where I grew up with my dad, had a 2-hour conversation. That conversation itself, he was very analytical in how he received it. But the next 3 years, our relationship was strained. The conversations were hard. My dad, to his credit, his initial thought was to do what's called sitting Shiva for me. And that's the ritual one goes through when when an immediate family member dies. Because that's how serious it was to him that I became a Christian. But he realized that his relationship with his son outweighed religious conviction. And I'm so glad that he was able to come to that epiphany, because it allowed us, as difficult as those conversations were, to be able to nurture that relationship and come to a better understanding of those theological convictions. And we talked about so much else. So that was a hard conversation, years of conversations, really. And in some ways, it's still going on today. The other thing that occurred to me was when we first started going to church was, this is the early 2000s, I realized a lot of guys that I was going to church with weren't nearly as compelled by the words of Jesus as they were by the words of Rush Limbaugh or whoever their favorite pundits were. You know, and the rubber met the road when there was something we were studying in scripture that just didn't reckon with their preferred positions on political or social issues. So over the years, I found myself in a lot of fraught conversations about politics. Hey, this is what Leviticus 19 is saying about immigration, but I know you're a closed border guy. How do we reckon with that? And frankly, I just wasn't doing it well. I'm a kid from Jersey, so sometimes the sharp elbows come out. And long story short, after a long time, especially in this era, by the time we get to 2020, I'm thinking, man, more so than any politician or any issue, we got to figure out how to do this better. We just got to figure out how to, like my dad did, prioritize the relationship over the position, prioritize the relationship over a politician, and just talk about the hard stuff. So that's what this project's been all about.
I want to dig in just a little bit to you and your father, because there are people who decide we will work this out by never talking about either of these subjects. And we'll get together still because we love each other. And we'll ask how the kids are, what's work like, and we will never talk about these things that are maybe even vitally important to us. But didn't that make it more difficult and more work that you would continue, both of you, these conversations and have questions for each other? Was that a conscious choice, or it's just, it worked out that way?
Yeah, that is the default. To say, Yuval Levin is a great scholar on conservative thought, conservative philosophy. And he's the one who said, we talked right before Thanksgiving, and he's the one who said, sometimes you get to Thanksgiving, you see your Uncle Stanley and say, Stanley, I really strongly disagree with you. Now pass the gravy. You know, otherwise you might take the gravy and dump it on his head. But, and listen, it's important to know what your limits are, where you've hit a boundary, or when you're going to get to a point where you're just so upset, you're not going to be your best self, and just tap out, at least for now. So that's perfectly acceptable. But I think that too many of us go to that place too quickly and then don't talk about it. The other thing is, we are not equipped with a toolbox, with tools where we can not default to that contentious kind of competitive argument mode, but into relationship building mode and understanding mode and listening better mode. And like David Brooks-Lee's book, How to Know a Person, The Art of Seeing Others Deeply and Being Deeply Seen. That's really what these conversations are about. And my dad and I could have many times went there. I got really upset with each other, but in a way, it's a gift if you are committed to the relationship, because you learn a lot more from the L's, from the losses, than you do from the wins. Mm. Oh man, I royally messed that one up. You know, whether it's sports or whether it's a conversation or just about anything else, when you mess something up, we tend to think more about those and see how we can do better next time. Not how we can make a better point and rhetorically smack our interlocutor down, but how we can learn better, understand better, see each other better, and, you know, do this whole thing of living among each other better.
Yeah, I just want to say amen.
Yeah.
But it ain't easy.
It ain't easy, baby.
And the idea of converting to Christianity and becoming a new person in Christ, but there's still so much good who you are was shaped by how you were raised and the faith of your youth and the faith of your parents. Did they need time to see that you were still holding on to those things that were valuable to them and that they had tried to pass on?
You know, my father eventually came around to that. My relationship with my mother is very different. So if you've ever seen the show Everybody Loves Raymond, I'm convinced that the writers of that show followed Phyllis around for years and crafted a character that is entirely based on Phyllis. So when
When
she first heard that I told her I was a Christian, and she didn't really respond. She floated into the next room and I said, I followed her. I said, "Mom, did you hear what I said?" And she said, "I'm sorry, I just never thought I'd have a son." And she couldn't find the words. And she finally said, "A son who was walking with Jesus." And then she calls into the other room. She goes, "Ronnie, du hast?" Yiddish, it's like, did you hear, Ronnie, du hast? "A son's a born-again Republican." And I'm like, "What? What? I said I'm a Christian. Like, where did you get that from?" So that was Phyllis. And the comedy has ensued ever since. So this conversation now going on 20-something years with my dad, he came to believe that there was no other way, that I couldn't have become who I am without having traversed that road, that religious, spiritual, theological evolution, if you will, as much as it went against every fiber of his being, emotionally, mentally, from a filial standpoint, political, every way that you could imagine, he eventually came around to seeing me in a fuller light and appreciating it. And part of that was through hard work. You know, for example, my oldest kid is Savannah, and then Jackie Boy and Emerson are boys. So we gave them a Brit Milah. We had a traditional bris, a ceremony for male children who are 8 days old. And each of the kids has Hebrew names. So we've done things that are not at odds with my theological convictions, my convictions as a Christian, but ways to honor who I am as a Jew. I just texted with my father about Seder. We're doing the first night of Passover at my house. We're doing the Seder. So there are these ways of us coming together and being who we are and practicing the story of being the people of God, albeit, you know, I'm in a different set of books than they are. One of the most interesting things is my dad's, his own evolution of how he sees Jesus. We were about 15 years into this conversation, and we were reading something together. We were reading one of N.T. Wright's bigger books. It might have been New Testament and the People of God. And he said, "You know, Corey, I think Jesus was a prophet in the, you know, in the tradition of Isaiah and Malachi and Jeremiah and the great Jewish prophets. And I think he was the tzaddik, which is, you know, the great rabbi of his generation." Mm. "And," he says, "I think he was a Messiah candidate." I said, "Oh, that's interesting." And he said, "But he was a failed Messiah candidate." I said, "Okay, I understand. You're a non-Christian Jew. That makes sense." He comes to me a year later. He said, he went through it again. He said, "I still think he was a failed Messiah candidate." But he goes, but that time, I think he was reading Yoder, John Howard Yoder's work at the time. And he said, "But now I think the failure was not the failure of Yeshua, of Jesus. It was the failure of the people of his generation."
Interesting.
So he's come to see me in a different light. He's come to see the history, the Yeshua ben Yosef, the Jesus of history, in a very different light as well, and very nuanced. A lot of Christians don't even have that nuanced of a view of Jesus.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I appreciate it's forced us both to really dig into scripture, into history, and, you know, and mostly it's just the product of a rich relationship and a rich conversation.
You're creating a soft spot in my heart for both of your parents, and I don't even know their names or what they look like, but you've brought them to life for me. Thank you very much. You bring up something that I was just jotting down notes about as you were talking, because what I see in you and what anyone would need to do this, I think it is a little bit of strength. And I'm going to the Sermon on the Mount here with the meek shall inherit the earth, and blessed are the peacemakers, that people who are willing to do that, they are not weak and just withering in the face of disagreement. They seem, and you seem, to have enough strength to say, "I can be here and listen to this person I disagree with. I can choose to do that." That seems to me like
strength of character.
I don't know if I could claim that for myself, but to your point about Jesus, if you go through the gospel accounts, it's an interesting exercise to see how many times he answers a question or even a challenge with another question. Now, there are times to get into a family heated argument. Matthew 23, man, that gets pretty heated. But a lot of times when he's meeting a stranger, when he's meeting with people that he's not supposed to be with, when he's meeting with people that were exiled or other outside of the accepted people of Israel, people of God, right? How many times does he ask about them? He knows them, but he asks about them. Even the young rich ruler, why do you call me good? Wow, that's interesting, because now it just opens up his interlocutor. It opens up his own assumptions. Mm. How did you arrive at that? And now we can have a conversation. It is good to read those things, read those gospel accounts. I hear there's a lot of good stuff in there.
But let me move briefly from directly interpersonal, sort of one-on-one, to public discourse. I mean, some people would say, oh no, it's always been bad. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I tend to think there are aspects of it that are worse now because there's so much more anonymity online. What can we do publicly to improve discourse? People can listen to people having a respectful discussion or disagreement, but what do you think about that?
It's going to sound trite, but I can't control the world. I can only control what's here. I can only control the conversations that I'm having. And if it's just you and me that are talking, I think that's work well done. If we do it, even if we mess up and we get in a fight, as long as we get to bam, book another meeting, as long as we get to coming back for another conversation, that's a success to me. I've messed up with dear, dear friends, somebody I'm going to see later tonight. Royally, I had a complete meltdown right around July 4th. I think we both messed up, but I can't control his actions. I don't account for his actions. I know I messed up. But throughout that summer, when we were ready, we got together again. We just got together for dinner and we didn't talk about it. When I was finally ready months down the road, I shared with him what was going on for me and where I felt like I lost it, where there was a breaking point for me. So in terms of our public engagement, I think if we set our expectations accurately, that will set us up for better success and better impact. And this is what I mean. I think a lot of us tend to get frustrated if we have it in our hearts to change the world. We get immensely frustrated on how little we can get done today. But if I have this one conversation and am open to being persuaded by one degree, which ironically makes me that much more effective at perhaps persuading by one degree with one person in one relationship, that's work well done. And you still might come, oh man, all he gave to me was that Biden is not a man-eating carnivorous zombie, whatever, I don't know. That's all he gave me. So you're going to be frustrated with that one conversation. But if you keep on coming back, I think you'll be amazed at how much you could get done in 5 years. So
even if there's one small thing we can do, just not giving up on the one small thing, and because of the immensity of the project at hand, we can inch
forward.
That's
right. It's not maybe not the best analogy to use a war analogy, but it's really trench warfare. It's not the kind of thing where we're going to make the perfect rhetorical, just beautiful grenade and just drop it and then we win everything and the world has changed and everybody agrees with us on everything. That's not how it goes. It's like literally 1 inch and 1 foot at a time. That's how this thing goes.
You're listening to In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. We'll be back with more in a moment. You know, there are no perfect people, and there are no perfect families, and no perfect relationships. So how do we be good people and have good relationships and good families? How do we do better at what is most important to us? I'm here to tell you about The Lisa Show, another in the family of BYU Radio podcasts. Lisa Valentine Clark is a comedian, a believer, a single mother. She delves into the challenges and the relationships that shape all of our lives, whether we're talking about parenting, mental health questions, social issues, being a caregiver. She and her council of moms tackle the topic. Yes, you'll hear from experts, but you'll also hear from the people who have been digging the trenches. She'll help you figure out this thing called life with lots of laughs along the way. It's The Lisa Show. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is In Good Faith. Welcome back. I'm chatting with Corey Nathan, host of Talkin' Politics and Religion Without Killin' Each Other. Does what you're doing to help people be able to do this and have these discussions, is that an outgrowth of your faith life?
It is. It is, because the way that I think of myself as an evangelical has definitely evolved over the years, but there are some fundamental things that are the same. Basically, what I'm doing is explicitly inviting someone into a relationship, but I need to know what I'm inviting them into. You know, I need to know what that relationship is and who's in the community that I'm inviting them into. I think when I was younger, even as a new Christian, I think I went about it more in a salesy kind of a way. Like, if I give all the proper closes, then they'll be thoroughly convinced after one conversation and give their lives to the Lord. But I don't think those roots were deeply, you know, the seeds were deeply planted enough to have firm roots or a firm foundation. So I'm still doing that in a way. Not that I want everybody to agree with my particular theological framework. That's God's, like, God's not biting his fingernails about all that. But I think to invite someone into a relationship, I think, is maybe what I can do. And sometimes the relationship is just listener. A lot of folks engage with me through different social media platforms or email or reviews, whether it's a 5-star or a 1-star. So a lot of folks engage that way. Some folks just engage by listening. And that's cool too. We're still in a relationship, because I really am giving it my heart, soul, mind, and strength. You know, I do try to pour that into every conversation I have and what I share.
Finally, if I could ask, it is personal and it's a little bit different for everybody, but can you put your finger on why you believe in something divine, in God?
It's not a fair question, I think, at least for me, because it's the most irreducibly, most empirically verifiable fact of the universe to me. But the irony, and I think God has a sense of humor, the irony that it's the most irreducible, empirically verifiable fact in the universe to me, but the irony and the humor in it is that it's not empirically verifiable to anyone else but me. You know, I think the only other thing that I would say is very related to that, the two most irreducible facts of the universe, is there is a God and I'm not him. So why do I believe?
Lots of us forget that second part.
Well, I guess why I believe is because the second, because I know for a fact that I'm not God. Therefore, there must be a God. I don't know. It just, man. Okay. So I'll give you a serious answer. How do I know there is a God? The sense of numinous. I think that there is something transcendent about his crowning creation. There is something transcendent that we sense when we hear music. There's something transcendent about seeing a sunset and appreciating beauty. There is something in humor, right? We have these little glimpses of the transcendent in the mundane. And that, I think, is a good proof. Another good proof, and gosh, this is why it's so hard to talk about it, but every moment is another act of creation. Every moment, right? This one and this one. Nothing is guaranteed. So every moment in time is another act of creation. So where are we? We're at the intersection of time and eternity. The intersection of time and eternity is the present. So I don't know how else to talk about it other than, again, there's a sanctity in the mundane. If we're looking for it, if we have eyes to see it, it's there.
And, amen. And, If we can learn to see that in each other.
Yeah, in each other.
Whether we agree or not.
In each other. Absolutely right. I think, that's a really profound point. I want to ruminate on that one a bit. I want to think on that one a bit, because you're right. I think, and that might be an answer to one of your other questions, is how do we do this thing better? Is seeing the divine in each other. Seeing the complexity and the nuance and the infinite beauty of the other that we're talking to, the others who are in our lives.
That's Corey Nathan, host of Talking Politics and Religion Without Killing Each Other, a podcast. His conversion is really an interesting thing to me because to go from one faith tradition to another, you get to experience the turmoil that can cause in a family, which is a nice little microcosm for how people of various faiths can see each other and get along or not get along. I found myself wondering if we should be asking ourselves, what terrible things can happen when we don't work together with different people of different faiths or different political persuasions, if we don't live in neighborhoods with people of different races and traditions, and even if we don't worship together. I would not have thought of that worship part, but I have found that going to other houses of faith and sacred places and seeing the devotion people have has increased my understanding and respect for them.
Yeah, I personally had the experience of joining a new religion when I was a teenager. And when I listened to you two talk about, well, some people just solve this problem by never talking about it, I would say there came a point in my family where we just stopped talking about it. And that was a huge relief for me. Like, oh, gosh, thank you so much.
It seemed like the solution.
Yeah, it seemed like the solution because so much of the discussion was, you know, felt very negative, felt very, you know, critical. And so when we stopped talking about it, I was just relieved. But that doesn't mean there didn't eventually come a time when I thought, and some of my family members thought, well, we can still share those things that we have in common. And I think that's important. I think that's a lovely question you ask, Corey. Didn't your parents eventually recognize that you had not forsaken the values that they had taught you and that you, in fact, had held on to these things? And I think that's such an important thing to recognize.
I think that one of the stories that stuck out the most to me from this interview was when he told us about his dad's desire to sit Shiva for him after he told his father about his conversion to Christianity, and how just that showed, even before his dad was able to come to an acceptance and they were able to come to a better relationship together and move past it and be able to talk about it, before that was able to happen, his dad displayed his commitment and his care and his concern for Corey, but in the best way he knew how, in his own faith and tradition. And Corey was able to give his dad credit for that, as he said in the interview. And I think that that's beautiful on both sides.
Many thanks to Corey Nathan. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Leah King, Katarina Martinich, Josh Orton, and Ashton Rowan. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Brandon Lewis, Daniel Phillips, and Carly Wilson. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If interfaith understanding is important to you, be sure you leave a positive comment or review where you get your podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, Apple. Find us on Twitter at InGoodFaithPod, on Instagram and Facebook at InGoodFaithPodcast. Find us on YouTube at youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you'll join me again soon, right here in Good Faith.